tuning in to the Ramilly Matters podcast. I am your host, Ishmael Sistrunk, the Executive Director of Communications. And with me today, I have a special guest, one of our gifted teachers, Ms. Jill Meeson. Ms. Meeson, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Ishmael.
And we had some conversation before the podcast. We know that you're retiring this year, and so that's sad for Riverview Gardens, but happy for you. So we'll talk about that a little bit. But first, just like to talk about who is Jill Meeson, what brought you to Riverview Gardens School District, and how has this experience been for you?
Well, first of all, when you talk about a gifted teacher, a lot of people coil at that, because it's not necessarily that I'm the better teacher of everybody. It's that I teach gifted children.
Right.
And so gifted children are a unique blend of precocity, independence, deduction. And so gifted education is an intervention just like special education would be.
Okay.
So I am a teacher that's good with all of those kids on the periphery of that bell curve. I'm not your average middle of the road teacher. So I'm not good for those kids. I'm good for the kids who really need the help.
Gotcha.
And that's why I decided to work for Riverview 5 years ago or 4 years ago, 5 years ago, I guess. I wasn't always in teaching. I was a journalism major, and I was a reporter in Peoria, Illinois, small little town, did a little stint in Chicago too. And when I got married, I was not old, but I was not young. I needed to find a career that I could blend with having children. Hmm. And so I went into teaching. At the time I was going into teaching, the Hazelwood decision in the Supreme Court about student press just had been issued.
Wow.
So that's about 90, 91.
Okay.
A lot of schools were running scared about having a journalism program. And
what was that decision?
That decision was that it used to be that you had, with Tinker versus Des Moines, you had a First Amendment right. Students had a First Amendment right, but they were limited once they came to the school gates. That's mm-hmm. That's the benchmark case.
Right.
But the Hazelwood decision basically said that students can be found liable if they have sloppy reporting, if it's not, the copy isn't edited right. It basically put more responsibility and more causal relationship to the advisor. So people were scared. And most journalism teachers at that time were not journalism majors. They maybe got a certification.
Gotcha.
Nowadays, you will find most journalism teachers in prominent high schools, they have a journalism major, and they've done some work in industry.
Right.
So you kind of know that, but it's a fine balance with that Hazelwood decision as to how do you let the kids make their own decisions?
Mm-hmm.
Because that is how children learn.
Right.
They do have to make mistakes. But when those mistakes create huge PR problems for school districts,
right,
legality issues, that was what was going on during that time.
Okay.
It was the actual case at Hazelwood East happened in, I believe, 1987, but the Supreme Court decision wasn't handed out down till 91.
Okay.
And so it had a ripple effect of a lot of journalism programs were disbanding.
Right.
Because they were nervous about it. So Afton had hired me based on that. And I revamped their journalism program.
Okay.
And it's at that time that I got started in my gifted education, because I was a writer. I did grant writing. And at that time, it was the Javits grant, the federal grant for gifted education. And so I helped them write their Javits grant. And we designed what's called a school within a school
mm-hmm.
program. And so these were a clustered group of children who giftedness is usually defined by the state of Missouri, at least, as over 120 on the IQ test. So 100 is typical. 120 is two standard deviations above the mean.
Right.
And usually what that means is a lot of people will say, oh, these gifted kids are so smart, they don't need to be taught. But they do.
Right.
They teach themselves bad habits because they teach themselves before they're ready to go to school. So we had that kind of cluster program in Afton. And so I taught at the high school level because I also had a master's in the art of teaching writing, and I could teach 1818 English. Okay. That's what most we funneled most of the gifted kids into, that higher level AP track.
Right.
And so I did that for Afton. And then I did that. They asked me to come down and revamp the middle school program. So I did that. But in the meantime, I got my master's in reading from Webster. And when my children were younger, I didn't want as demanding a career. And gifted education is what a lot of people don't realize about gifted kids is you learn it. As a teacher, you learn from them just as much as they learn from you. Mm. It takes, you know, you have to be on top of your toes.
Right.
These kids will tell you something and you're like, huh, did not know that, you know? And so you have to be humble and you right. have to work together with them. And you have to facilitate that inquisitive nature mm. and that research. So I did get my master's in reading and I worked then for the Afton School District. Read 180 was a new concept out of Orange County, Florida.
Okay.
Mostly primarily dealing with Hispanic students, immigrants, that were below level reading. And so I was one of the first districts to bring Read 180 to okay. St. Louis. And I ran at that time it was like a BBS, like it was Yahoo Groups or whatever.
Okay.
And so it didn't have all the support that it has now. So we wrote mini lessons. And so I did that for a while. And then Rockwood called. And Rockwood has a premier gifted center called the Center for Creative Learning. Mm. And they wanted to recruit me to teach younger gifted kids, fourth grades. And that's the youngest grade I've ever taught.
Okay.
I'm a secondary person by nature.
Right.
And so I went to CCL and I was very fortunate to learn among the best gifted education teachers in the state of Missouri.
Okay.
One who is now the head of the Department of Gifted at DESE.
Okay.
And my principal was Dr. Smith, and I laugh about this. Dr. Linda Smith, who's my partner. My principal was Dr. Linda Smith, different Dr. Linda Smith.
Got you.
But we laugh about that. So I worked for them for a while, for 6 years. And then I was fortunate enough to be called to Ladue. And I was able to combine my journalism and my gifted experience, my gifted education experience for Ladue.
Okay.
So, and then I started contemplating, I'm going to retire in 10, 15 years. And I really wanted to do something different. I wanted to make a difference. I wanted to be some part of a child's transformation.
Right.
And Ladue was a lot of facilitation. It was, they have the resources, they have the means, mm-hmm. they have the money. They have the wherewithal, and I wanted to do something. I wanted to contribute greater than that.
Right.
So the pandemic hit, and I have a tutoring business that I do online. So I already know how to teach online.
Okay.
And I have like a studio like you have here right, in my right. office in my home. And where I was at that time when we were teaching, they didn't really want, you know, they didn't want you to teach. And I said, but I can, I can do it. And so I was the only one that was teaching virtually. And the kids were coming to my meetings. And so then when, you know, I thought, well, should I retire with the pandemic? And I thought, no, I'm not ready to. And the position at Riverview popped up.
Okay.
So I decided to take it. And, it's a very big job here. There's only the two of us. We serve all 12 schools. We test kids, and that testing process can take a while. Mm-hmm. There are three usually measures we have to capture according to the state's guidelines, and then we have to serve them. So they are mandated by the state of Missouri to have 150 minutes of gifted education.
Right.
Now, generally, that means what we try and do is when you develop curriculum, you try and develop high-interest curriculum, and we try and make sure that it's nothing that they are getting currently in their curriculum.
Right.
Yet the conundrum here at Riverview is we do have kids who are scoring in basic skills that are gifted. Mm-hmm. So we also have to address those gaps.
Right.
Mostly literacy. We try and make everything literacy heavy. Once they get into middle school and high school, we try and entertain their career goals and try and find them opportunities that will help them move forward. So, there's a lot of work to be done in Riverview here, and
right.
it needs to continue. We have a lot of talented kids. And like I said, I've taught in Rockwood and Ladue, and our kids shine just as bright as those kids.
Right.
And they may not have access to materials or the pathway or the guidance, and they need to. So like I said before, a bright mind is a wasted tool.
Right.
So right now there's two of us. For a district this size, there should really be more of us.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask, is how many gifted teachers, would be in a position in other school districts, some of the other districts that you came from?
In a school of this size and other districts that I've come from, you would probably have one. Well, first of all, Riverview did used to have a center model where the children were bused to the center.
Mm-hmm.
And that's generally a district that has this many schools would generally have a center model. And then in the secondary level, high school, the state guidelines say that high school is consultative, meaning we don't have to have a class per se that they get credit for, but we have to be available for their counseling needs.
Gotcha.
So that's more consultative, so that you don't really have to have a dedicated high school gifted teacher. Rockwood has teachers that go back and forth between the middle school and the high school. The middle school is a separate beast and a whole nother animal, and I'm very good at that level. Middle school kids, if they're not gifted, they feel different. They don't want to be singled out. They want to look the same.
Right.
They're all of that peer pressure. Middle school is a very important time, especially for girls, for gifted kids.
Mm-hmm.
They need to have a class. Most of my middle school gifted kids that I've had class with, they're like, this is the only place I can be me. I can be a nerd. I can be goofy. I can be,
right.
And I'm not made fun of. So they have to have that place that they come to. So we have trouble with that in our middle school models because of everything that needs to be done. But I would advise the next gifted education department to really fight for that, is middle school needs to be in their schedule. It needs to be an elective.
So what does the program look like? So I remember I was part of the PROBE program back in Ferguson, Florissant.
Yeah, uh-huh.
And then in Normandy, it was called ISP.
Uh-huh.
And so those were that bus out model where,
yes.
You know, there would be a day each week where I'd go, I think it was maybe half a day to participate in those programs.
Yep.
What does the program look like in Riverview Gardens?
In Riverview Gardens, we come to the elementary school kids. You try to pull them out of their specials.
Okay.
But again, many of those gifted kids love their specials. They're artists. They're talented music.
Right.
One of the things that I find about the African American community is creativity is off the charts.
Mm-hmm.
There's no test to test who is creative.
Right.
Okay. So that's one thing that I don't think the gifted educators have studied in minority populations. And that's my specialty, is special populations, which are minority or underrepresented populations in gifted. So you have to have a blend of, you know, that's why we blend our curriculum. It's multidisciplinary. So we might study something scientifically, a principle of scientific principle or something. I might have some math questions that go along with that. I might have them journal. Then they might have an art project. So that's what the curriculum is it's multidisciplinary. It's usually thematic based. Once they get a little older, you then get into what they want to study. So you look at their interests and recommend independent study projects. So here in Riverview, Dr. Smith and I travel. She has six schools, or she has most of the elementary, and because I have the middle school.
Okay.
She has the high school, and I travel to the other elementaries, and we pull them out for usually we don't try and pull them out any more than an hour because we don't want them to miss any of, you know, they miss their whole special time that way. And we try not to pull them out of their literacy. When they're younger, we try not to pull out of their literacy segment. And we have to work with the teachers and say, is the student deficient in math or reading? And we try not to pull them at the times that they would need core basic instruction.
Gotcha.
So that we do that. So that means we don't have a regular place. Sometimes we're in broom closets.
Wow.
Sometimes we're in the cafeteria. Sometimes we're in the library. It's just we don't have a regular place. We also, this is a equipment heavy. I mean, if you can remember doing experiments or things like that.
Right.
So my car is full of stuff. So my office is my car. I'm very rarely at my office in Central, except for when I test. When I test a bunch, and then I go back to my office, and I start calculating all those test results. And that's basically math. You know, and you're looking at all the norms and plotting it and graphing it. So that's what it would look like for right now. I believe there's one position that's open. They had one person who was interested, and they took another position, and the next person who was interested was not certified.
Gotcha.
I don't know if it's a shortage area. If it is a shortage area, it could be something that someone could get a temporary off in, so, and then agree to take 9 hours. And basically the certification process, you learn about high-level curriculum. You learn about differentiation, really, which most teachers get a background in. You have a lot of counseling classes because there is a lot of SEL skills needed. Sometimes these kids will be hypersensitive, so they will melt down. Perfectionism is a huge problematic issue of gifted kids. Sometimes, especially in girls, if they're multi-potential, meaning they're good at everything, they don't seem to find a way. So there's a lot of social-emotional skills that go into also counseling the gifted. So you have a class in that. And then you have administration of programs, and that's just basically, you know, knowing the state's guidelines and following those guidelines. So it's, you can get a master's in it for 33 hours, but the certification is not 33 hours.
Gotcha.
I think the certification is 24 to 30 hours. I'm not positive on that, but it, if it's a shortage area, it can be a temp off. But teachers who do well with those kids on either ends of the spectrum would like a gifted child. It's, you know, a lot of people say, oh, you don't have to do anything. You don't have to teach. Well, yes, you do. Yes, you do. Right. They're precocious. 20% of high school dropouts are gifted. So if they're not encouraged and challenged, they have a lack of drive, and they will create problems to solve for themselves. And then they become behavior issues.
Right.
And a lot of teachers will say, well, he can't be gifted. He doesn't do his homework. He doesn't, you know, he's suspended. That's oftentimes.
Yeah, you see that a lot of times where if students are bored in class or if they are not challenged, like you said, then that may manifest in behavioral issues or other distractions and things like that.
Yes.
So you mentioned earlier, you said, you know, you worked in several districts, worked with gifted kids all around, and you said Riverview Garden students, you know, are just as talented and gifted as others.
Absolutely.
What are some of the things that you've noticed, or, you know, just some of the outstanding moments or students that you remember? I know you're going into retirement soon. And so just what are some of those memories that you have?
Just hear what I would say of every place I've taught. Creativity. I've never seen the scale of creativity that I have seen in this community. And unfortunately, you know, the real world doesn't put a price on that, doesn't put just the thinking process, the music, the dance, the art, everything is coordination. Everything is thought in those terms, in creative terms. And there are a lot of kids who are really good at linear thinking, you know, mathematics, and can solve a problem. One of the things I think that we need to focus on Riverview is their frustration tolerance. And especially the gifted kids, if they don't get it right the first time, and a lot of times I teach class and my middle schoolers are like, I don't get this. I'm like, don't whine. don't combust. We're going to do this together. That's a valuable skill. The de-escalation of emotions and the de-escalation of frustration tolerance is a valuable skill that's needed to make sure that their skills are transferable to the work world.
Right. And I think that's a global issue.
It is a global issue.
Because we've seen that more and more, especially you talked about the pandemic, you know, following the pandemic, it just seems like it's more of a challenge to, you know, maintain frustration and anger and things of that nature.
Right. But, you know, it's definitely, and then just to, you know, there sometimes when, so the state gifted ratio is no more than 15 kids.
Okay.
We like to keep it smaller.
Right.
So when there's big classes in their regular curriculum, our gifted kids sometimes have issues with that. But also pulling them out of those classes gives the opportunity for those kids who are proficient and moving up to advanced, or basic and moving up to proficient, mm-hmm. to shine and to take over.
Gotcha.
Then it's not that, me, I know.
Right.
You know? And that's another, if you don't do a center model, then cluster grouping is another way. Now, some people say this is elitist, but it's not, because you're not rewarding these gifted kids for being gifted, but you're not penalizing them either. So if you have kids who are scoring in the 95th percentile and above in math, then they can be clustered together, and that classroom can move faster and more in depth and breadth in math concepts.
Gotcha.
Whereas then the other students can be separated into groups.
Mm-hmm.
It's commonly called tracking, and a lot of people don't like it, but I think it's the best way to deal with some of these emotional meltdown issues.
Gotcha.
Because that behavior always has a reason. There's always a trigger. And so those kids are behaving that way because they either feel stupid, they feel powerless, there's something else going on. And if you can't address that because you have 28 kids that all need this varied, you know, thing, you have a difficult time pinpointing that. So cluster grouping, I think, is good, especially for math. In Rockwood, they had what's called math component. So those kids that were scored extra high in math, they were given a math component elective in their gifted education.
Okay.
So that can also be done in English language arts. And so that helps sometimes. I think that if you did that in the elementaries, you wouldn't – in the best case scenario, you would want a gifted specialist at every building. You really would. That's the best model.
Gotcha.
But if you can't do that, then cluster grouping would be the best way to address. And that way, you could even trade off. This teacher would get the cluster group this year. The next teacher would get the cluster group the following year. And then the gifted specialist can also work on professional development with that teacher. And eventually then your teachers would have more in-depth knowledge of gifted education.
Okay.
And can deal with that. So, but definitely, you know, the middle school, they need to be pulled away from their peers. And that's what Flow Value
right.
For Flow is doing with the STEAM Academy.
Gotcha.
That's what they've done.
Okay.
So after, you know, Probe was the center model where you traveled, mm-hmm. and now their answer to middle school and high school are the STEAM Academies.
Okay. So now, why is gifted education important, or why should it be important to parents? I know earlier you mentioned that sometimes kids may feel a certain kind of way, either, you know, if they are gifted and maybe they're ashamed, or if they're mm-hmm. not. But parents, I think, often go through those emotions too. Some don't want their kids
correct.
In the gifted program, and other ones, you know, may be upset if their kids are not in the gifted program.
Correct.
So explain that a little bit.
I think a lot of what happens here at Riverview, we have to remember that some of our parents had negative experiences at school.
Mm-hmm.
And it's our job to show those parents too that school is positive. It can be positive. I think the biggest reason as to why you need gifted education is if your kid falls into the wrong crowd, they're going to – so a lot of gifted kids, it's like when you're a coach and you're doing a sport. You can't get faster until you do wind sprints.
Right.
Some kids hate that.
Yeah.
I'm playing ball. Why do I need to do wind sprints, right?
Right.
That's conditioning. Mm-hmm. And it's the same with gifted kids. If they're not conditioned, they immediately they start to say, I'm not getting this. This is too hard. I must be stupid. And or here's an easier corner I can take.
Right.
I don't need to legit make money. I can illegit make money.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll find that way.
Right.
Okay. So gifted kids are at risk for not developing their potential as much as kids who need extra help.
Right.
It's like I said, it's a waste of talent and of mind. I don't want to say to the parents, you have to sacrifice your child to this situation, because especially in middle school, you will fight the gifted kid on whether they want to go or not. Mm-hmm. It's like they'll say to you, I don't really want to go, but they really secretly do want to go. And so it's just, I think our community needs to place a priority on education.
Right.
On the way up, the way to commute, to come back and contribute to your society and your community. The way, you know, and many kids have that internal value system for themselves. Mm-hmm. You know, so it with for a parent, it's just, it's difficult. They're not, you know, it does provide more. It's a resume builder. It's definitely, when you put that on your resume, it's going to, you know, look, someone's going to say, this child has obviously been circled out as somebody who can go farther. Because they can withstand, they have, and it's really not, it's funny because a lot of people don't understand IQ. It is genetic. It is a part of you that just like my green eyes. And so it is oftentimes parents don't realize if they have a gifted kid, they're probably gifted too. Mm. And it's deduction. When these kids, like these are the kids that look at a math problem and they don't even go through the steps in their head. They just blurt out the answer. And everyone's like, how did you do that? You know, and that's all in neurology. And so, you know, they often also have other neurodivergent categories that come along with them. It can make them, you know, some of our kids almost appear that they are on the autism spectrum because they're so factual. That can be a problem with interpersonal skills. And when you go into the work world, even if you decide not to go to college, even if you're working at McDonald's, you know, that can cause a problem. So you just, you know, as a parent, you want the best for your kids. You want your kids to have it easier than you did. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, if they can tap into their own strength and persevere and learn that perseveration and learn that commitment, that's going to take them. You know, those are the kids that aren't going to be living in your basement on the couch playing Grand Theft Auto or
right.
or 2K or, you know, World of Warcraft or whatever, Call of Duty. Those are going to be the kids that they'll take initiative. And those are going to be the movers and shakers of the world.
Okay.
And we need to see African-American talent in right. our world.
And it seems like it's important that you have the staff, the team in place that can recognize that and that can serve those students, as you mentioned before. And so, because someone who has not gone through that training or that certification process may just think, well, you know, this kid just is behaving poorly because they behave poorly and not recognize that. So,
or they may think they're annoying when they say me, 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 me,
right.
me, you know,
right.
Or, you know, like I have boys who are gifted that aren't into sports, you know, and to be a young black man who doesn't want to like basketball and not going to play it
right.
and is tall, you know, that's something that's internally, that's a problem internally. And so that's because they're nerdy, you know, and they don't want to say that to anybody. So I've got kids who, you know, don't really like PE class and they don't want to say anything. That's, you kind of have to understand gifted kids. You have to understand the weird ones, mm-hmm. you know, the Apple poem about the misfits. Mm-hmm. You have to be able to understand those kids. They're, yeah, and also someone who's not trained and gifted, they may not realize how very manipulative these children are.
Oh, wow.
You know, they can think of everything's going on in their mind. And so you have to be one step ahead of them, especially with technology. They will try and they also try. These kids will also say, I know more than you, mom and dad. And I often tell them, knock that down a case, buddy, because gifted intelligence is inherited. So you probably got it from your mom or dad.
Right.
They thought about this before you ever even thought about it. So that's part of it too. And there are usually people who teach gifted are little odd themselves.
Gotcha.
And are a little bit, you know, quirky and understand those quirks of the gifted kid.
So I know you mentioned you're retiring. And so obviously, you know, we're looking for
yes.
a gifted teacher to step in. And hopefully, you know, as you mentioned, there really is a need for an enhanced gifted program. why should a gifted teacher, you know, who's someone else or someone who may be in college finishing up that degree, why should they come to Riverview Gardens?
I would say, just as myself, I have a passion for social justice. If you want to make a difference, a true difference, many, many times gifted programs are considered elitist in the majority in of the community. You know, they're the more wealthier students, and that's not the case. This underrepresented populations are more at risk than ever, especially after the pandemic. And if you want to make a difference, if you want to change a child's life, and, you know, I'm going on 60, so I'm tired. I have all these ideas in my head of what you can do. There are tons of, there is the Black Engineers Group, mm-hmm. That meets at Flow Valley. There's a Black, engineer group at Boeing. I mean, there's tons of untapped resources out there that we can get our kids connected with. And if you have the passion and the energy to change the trajectory of a kid's world, come to Riverview. It's more than money. You have to, first of all, you can't be in teaching for the money, but yes, you have to pay your bills. But that feeling of knowing that this kid knows about something because you facilitated it is so grateful, more than you can't put a price tag on that.
Right. And it sounds like that there's definitely an opportunity to, you know, build out the program to really make an impact on, and we don't know what the allocation for staffing and all of that, but it just seems like there's a big opportunity to sort of frame that program.
Well, we are given a budget. A gifted education is not a line item budget in the general education fund. It is an earmarked budget. So there, I don't know about salary. You know, that would have to be up to the cabinet to figure that out. But there's a materials budget. There is money
right.
especially earmarked for that.
Okay.
And I know, you know, Dr. Pruitt Adams, I believe, had a child that went through gifted education. So I think most of our cabinet members have had children that have – they realize the value of this program.
Right.
Your gifted kids aren't going to carry your test scores. But you sure don't want them regressing either.
Right.
So
no, absolutely. And so as you go into retirement, do you have any big plans? Are you just going to sit and relax?
No,
or are you going to?
No. So for the past, ever since 2015, I have supplemented my income by teaching online.
Okay.
And one of the venues that I've taught in is China. China pays big time for American teachers. So I first started teaching ESL or EFL, English as a Foreign Language, online early in the morning before I would come to work and late at night. I have since then moved to teaching for an international school over in Beijing that only has gifted children. So these are Asian children that their English is extremely proficient, better than some of ours. And I teach them a high level language arts course.
Okay.
It's the same course I used to teach at Ladue. It's a Michael Clay Thompson curriculum. And so it's a lot of homeschool and private schools use that curriculum. So I do that on Friday nights, Saturday mornings, Saturday nights, and Sunday mornings, early in the morning, like from 4 a.m. And then, I am going to, even though I have my master's, and I've been trying to finish my doctorate, but I'm going to get the certification as a dyslexia practitioner one first.
Okay.
And that's with the Scottish Rite. And so I will be on Tuesdays and Thursday evenings working with dyslexic kids. And I've done that also since 2015. And so I have my own online business and I make more than I actually make in my public school salary.
Gotcha.
So that's my job. That'll be what I'll be doing.
So you're not retiring to go to rest. You're retiring to continue the work and continue
one-on-one
to educate.
Yes. Yes.
So that's awesome.
Yes.
Well, we definitely wish you the best in your retirement, and we're sad to see you go from Riverview Gardens, but it seems like you still have a lot to offer, and you're going to be doing that in different venues. And really, I mean, that's the important thing, is just to continue to support education, to continue to educate youth, whether they're in Riverview and China and wherever. that work is important. And so,
and I've let Dr. Nichols and Dr. Hunter know that, and I'm sure Dr. Smith will agree with me too, is, you know, when you get somebody in place, we will be here to answer those questions and to help.
Awesome.
And figure out, you know, I'm not just gonna mic drop and leave.
Wonderful. So is there anything else that you'd like to add that I didn't ask you about or that you'd like to share?
No. I really wish I had more youth to be able and more energy to be able to stitch together some of the ideas and make it possible for Riverview and the kids.
Well, you may have some youth left. We'll see, you know, step away, do your own business, and maybe you'll come back. We've seen that before.
Yeah.
In fact, I left the district for a while and back, and we've seen people retire and things have changed with Missouri where they allow you to work. So
Yep. That's true.
Maybe we'll see you back.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Dr. Lenoir asked me if I would do the reading specialty over there at Danforth, and I taught with him at Ladue. He was a math teacher in the high school when I taught at Ladue.
So good deal.
That's it.
We definitely thank you for your service, and thank you for joining the Ramley Matters podcast. And hopefully we've had some parents that are listening, some scholars that are listening that understand gifted program and the importance of it a little bit more. And maybe we have some teachers that are listening, you know, from a different, maybe they're in Ladue or in Rockwood or Ferg Floor. And maybe they're thinking about making an impact in Riverview Garden School District.
Absolutely. Love to see those teachers come and migrate over here.
Absolutely. All right. Well, thank you for joining the show. And listeners, thank you for tuning in again. Here with Jill Meeson, gifted teacher in Riverview Garden School District, at least for another couple of weeks.
Thanks, Ishmael.
All right. Thank you.